There wasn't much to see on the mountaintop that day. Not much man-made anyway. One white telescope dome, the size of a tiny hut. A newly finished dirt road snaking toward the summit of Hawaii's tallest mountain. Dozens of dignitaries journeyed to Mauna Kea anyway, made the long, slow trek up the mountain to listen to a man who could see things no one else could. Gerard Kuiper was a man with extraordinary vision. One of the world's top astronomers, Kuiper had such insanely good eyesight that he could observe stars four times too dim for the average human eye to see. But Kuiper had never seen anything like the stars from Hawaii's Mauna Kea. Mauna Kea, Kuiper proclaimed, was the finest spot on planet Earth for observing the stars. If Kuiper had talked to many native Hawaiians about his plans to develop Mauna Kea for astronomy, they probably would have told him that there are places where man is not meant to build, that there are things in this world that cannot be perceived by any human eye, not even eyes as sharp as his. But it was 1964, and native Hawaiians weren't consulted much or invited to many dedication ceremonies. They asked an Anglican priest to dedicate the new road that would open Mauna Kea for development, sent out invitations to the governor, the head of the university, members of the business community. So it was 125, mostly white and Japanese American, men and women who stood on the slopes of Mauna Kea that day listening to Kuiper. They couldn't actually see the summit of Mauna Kea from where they stood, but they could picture it in their minds, the way Kuiper saw it. A summit with the largest collection of telescopes in the world. Telescopes that had discovered what was nearly unimaginable in 1964. The expanding rate of the universe, the presence of dark matter, the black hole in the center of the Milky Way galaxy. Perhaps they could even imagine a day half a century later when another group of dignitaries would gather on the mountain for the groundbreaking of a 14th telescope. A telescope so big it would have the power to look back through time to the moment the first stars in the galaxy formed. What they probably didn't imagine in 1964 was that there would be a lot of Hawaiians at that groundbreaking ceremony in 2014, also without an invitation. Dozens of men and women charging up the summit to deliver a message decades in the making. Get off our mountain. From Honolulu Civil Beat and PRX, this is Offshore, Stories from Hawaii. I'm Jessica Terrell. The fight over Mauna Kea is a lot more than just a straightforward clash of science versus culture or religion. And it sent me on a reporting journey I never expected. From vaudeville shows in Depression-era Oklahoma to Apache spirit trackers in present-day Arizona. From sacred ceremonies at the edge of an active volcano to underground research laboratories in California. The story of Mauna Kea is a story about science and culture, yes. But it's also about land and power, about who gets to say what's sacred and what's not, about the way Hawaiians, scientists, and humans in general search for meaning, about our changing understanding of the universe and competing visions for the future of our country and our planet.
The Earth is being threatened in our backyards, in all our backyards. So I cannot help but stand, because if I don't, the Earth will die and so will I anyway. So you see, we've come to a point where you literally have no choice. But in that awakening, this is the beauty of it. You have never felt more alive.
Sponsorship for Offshore comes from MailChimp. MailChimp lets you track sales, customers, and email subscribers on one unified dashboard for advertising and email. More than 14 million people use MailChimp to connect with their customers, market their products, and grow their e-commerce businesses every day. They are the world's leading email marketing platform, and they send more than a billion, yeah, a billion with a B, emails every day. MailChimp. Send better email, sell more stuff. Native Hawaiians and environmental groups have been fighting telescope development on Mauna Kea for decades. But it had almost always been a local issue, something that made the papers on neighbor islands, but wasn't at the forefront of most people's minds in Honolulu, let alone, say, Los Angeles. Then came plans for the 30-meter telescope, the TMT, a $1.4 billion observatory with a dome 18 stories tall, the largest and most powerful telescope ever built. Hawaiian activists disrupted the groundbreaking ceremony in October of 2014. And then, the following April, when construction was set to begin, they gathered on the cold and foggy mountainside. They blew their pu, or conch shell. They chanted. And they put their bodies between construction trucks and the summit of their sacred mountain. Police arrested dozens of Hawaiians for blocking the road. More Hawaiians came to take their place. Hundreds upon hundreds. Jason Momoa, the hunky, part Native Hawaiian actor who played Khal Drogo on Game of Thrones, he joined in the fight. He took a picture shirtless with "We Are Mauna Kea" drawn across his chest, and the internet went crazy. Suddenly, the telescopes on Mauna Kea were international news.
The largest telescope project in the world.
New video tonight. 30-meter telescope protesters take to the streets of Pasadena, California.
Tani maiana nā reo irunai te riri me te a wanawana.
O Mauna Kea I roto mai o Hawaii.
There have been lots of twists and turns since then. For now, all you really need to know is that construction is currently on hold while everyone battles it out in court. Before I can show you the battle lines that have been drawn and all that is at stake, I have to tell you about the mountain. I have to tell you about Mauna Kea.
The mountain is, you know, it's definitely an elder, one of the wisest of elders.
This is Ruth Aloha. She's a young Hawaiian activist who was arrested in 2015 during protests against the TMT.
The easiest way to think of it is like grandparents. You know, everybody's got one or two grandparents that are really standoffish or grouchy and mean. But once you get to know them or you get your friends to get to know them, they just have the biggest hearts. And that's kind of what Mauna Kea is on a cloudy day, you know. I've seen her fully covered by clouds where you can't see the mountain. And, you know, and nobody's been able to see the mountain for weeks. And then you'll have a handful of us that can go to the mountain and lift our prayers and our songs and our chants. And she just unveils herself. The clouds will just open up for us while we're there, and then as soon as we leave, she'll close.
Mauna Kea is a massive dormant volcano, making up almost a quarter of the Big Island's landmass. Imagine one mountain a quarter of the size of Connecticut. People refer to Mauna Kea in different ways. He, she, it. But if you were to think of Mauna Kea as a woman, picture a quiet woman. A woman of great stature who doesn't care much for fancy clothes. The Rockies, the Himalayas, the Alps, those are more like the runway models of mountains. Giant peaks with jagged edges covered in glimmering snow. Flashy. Mauna Kea is a bit mysterious. Her style is subtler, a little more subdued. Don't get me wrong, she can wear a stunning cloak of white snow with great flair, but she often shies away from being the center of attention. She rises nearly 14,000 feet above sea level, but with such a slow and gentle slope that you don't realize at first how tall she is. That slow slope, by the way, is part of what makes the mountain so perfect for astronomy. The first time I stayed in Hilo, the main town on the Big Island, I didn't even realize Mauna Kea was there. Maybe it was a cloudy day. Maybe I didn't know to look for the mountain in the distance, to look for the gradual slope of brown and green. But the next time I arrived on a clear day, and the summit of Mauna Kea was covered in snow. It was stunning, so imposing that it was hard to imagine how I had ever possibly missed it. For people who want to visit Mauna Kea, who want to see the stars or watch the sunset from above the clouds, the first stop is usually a parking lot across from Saddle Road, about 45 minutes from Hilo.
First, I want to say welcome. Aloha. Welcome. Welcome.
This is Pua Case. She's a Hawaiian cultural practitioner and one of the leading opponents of the 30-meter telescope.
And we're very happy that you're here. And this is our mountain that we are standing for. This is our Mauna Awakea, Mountain of the Sky Father. And you are standing at a place we call Pu'uhuluhulu.
She's talking to a group of Canadians on a tour of sacred places in Hawaii.
And I'm going to be like crying today, but just, you know, it's how I am.
They'll all be crying with you.
Yeah.
I swear.
We never apologize for that. Never. Never. We never say, I'm sorry, I'm crying. No. We never say that.
Bordering the small parking lot is an enormous old lava field, a vast expanse of black rock that looks otherworldly almost. On top of the hardened lava is a small stone altar, or ahu.
This ahu was constructed for the elders that cannot go to the top of the mountain anymore.
Symbolically, when you stand at the ahu, here, it's as if you're standing on the mountaintop, Pua says. On the mountain. Hawaiians also stop at the ahu before heading up Mauna Kea to leave offerings as part of a protocol, a basic courtesy, if you will, to the mountain.
I want you to think about when you're going to your grandmother's house, at least for us as a people, when we drive in and we haven't called first, we get out of the car and we stand in the yard and we say, "Hui, Grandma," from the yard, because we want Grandma to know that we understand that she needs to make ready for us because we didn't call ahead.
And Hawaiians believe you should have a reason for visiting the mountain.
It's like any other grandma. They say, "Why are you waking me up for?" Right? Make sure you have a good reason. And good reason might be just, "I'm here to sing to you today. I'm here to pray for you because I love you with all my heart. And I would never let anything happen to you." Maybe that's just the reason.
It takes about 20 minutes to get from the base of Mauna Kea to the visitor center at 9,000 feet. This is as far as most people go. Staying for sunset or nightly stargazing, it's crazy popular. People stumbling over each other in the dark to peer through portable telescopes.
Once again, if you're in the line for Venus, please try to straighten it out.
Getting to the top of Mauna Kea, getting inside Grandma's house, is hard in the winter. Rangers shut down the roads when there's snow, which is actually pretty often. Only telescope officials can drive to the mountaintop then. It's very cold at the top, the air thin and the wind fierce, but it's also stunning. Red, brown, and green hills, cinder cones, give shape to the otherwise stark and barren landscape. You're so high above the clouds that it almost appears as if you're looking down at the ocean. Mountaintops in the distance look more like islands in that white, fluffy sea.
It's an incredibly serene setting, though. Basically breathtaking.
Doug Simons is the executive director of one of the older telescopes on Mauna Kea, the Canada-France-Hawaii Telescope.
To be out there and to be able to witness a sunset or to simply shut yourself off from the world and take it all in one setting is something that, you know, when I've taken people up, I'm convinced they will never forget that experience. There's almost a, you know, kind of a spiritual aspect to having that kind of opportunity.
That's the other thing to know about Mauna Kea. There's something about the mountain that makes people of all backgrounds speak about it with almost a reverential tone. People who worship there, hunt there, work there.
Amongst my sort of personal stories is my intent to have my ashes spread at some point in the lower elevations of Mauna Kea, because that's, in a sense, my home. I've spent such a large fraction of my time being there. I literally know what Mauna Kea tastes like and smells like, and have that sort of lasting connection that is unlike any other place in the world for me.
Offshore is also brought to you this season with the help of Bombas, a sock company with a pretty cool backstory. 4 years ago, two guys quit their jobs at a media company to make a difference in the world with socks. They learned socks are the most requested item at homeless shelters. At the same time, they realized there was a gap in the market for a more thoughtfully crafted sock. They spent 2 years researching and developing the perfect sock, getting rid of annoying seams, figuring out how to help prevent blisters. And for every pair of socks they sell, Bombas donates a pair to those in need, more than 2 million pairs so far. Bombas offers a money-back guarantee. To get 20% off your first order, go to bombas.com/offshore.
Wow, okay. Oh, it is pitch black.
Okay, I got a flashlight, just hold on.
Gerard Kuiper, the star of that first astronomy dedication on Mauna Kea in 1964, never actually got to build a telescope there. NASA gave the funding Kuiper needed to the University of Hawaii instead. Then the state designated a huge portion of land on Mauna Kea as a science reserve and leased it to the university for $1 a year. One observatory on Mauna Kea turned into two, then six. Other countries started looking to Mauna Kea. Canada, France, the United Kingdom, Japan. Telescope domes grew bigger. Equipment became more sophisticated. If Kuiper were alive to see inside of an observatory today, he would find himself in a very unfamiliar place.
Hear that sound?
Yeah. It's okay, the cooling, so, right?
Yes, that's an infrared instrument. In order to be able to function in the infrared, the entire inside of that instrument is cooled. There are compressed helium lines that run from compressors that are downstairs up here to the instrument.
I'm standing inside a large telescope dome at the Keck Observatory on Mauna Kea with operations manager Grant Hill. We're on a platform about four stories up from the ground. It's a few minutes before sunset, and if it weren't totally dark inside, I'd be looking at an enormous telescope mirror made up of dozens of segments. A crazy-looking thing supported by metal beams and rods that allow it to rotate in all directions.
I'm going to open the shutters for one, and the only shutters will be in motion. Telescope as well.
Shutters are opening.
I've spent weeks trying to get here, juggling scheduling and bad weather. To be here at the moment one of these telescopes opens and astronomy observations begin. And the whole thing would honestly feel a bit anticlimactic if it weren't for this. As the shutter opens and light comes in, the telescope mirror and the entire 10-story dome begin to rotate in opposite directions.
Here's a good view. You can see the light's going to come down from the sky, reflect off the primary mirror, back up to the secondary mirror, then come down off the tertiary mirror, and into high res, which is that, what looks like a small building over there you could walk around inside.
While Grant's pointing to the wild-looking equipment in the center of the dome, I'm still mesmerized by the way the dome itself is moving. It's crazy. It feels as if I'm still spinning quickly around the telescope, but really, the platform I'm on is the only thing that's been standing still.
Yeah, it's very common to feel that way. Because you're looking at something that's moving, there's something else that totally surrounds you that's moving, and so it's very, I've seen this a million times and I feel like I'm moving.
The way everything seems like it's spinning when it's not, this kind of topsy-turvy feeling, it's not unlike the way sorting through the conflict over Mauna Kea can feel. With one twist, the people you generally think of as the good guys come to seem like the bad guys. And then one more spin around the room, and you're back to where you started.
When they say, where were you all those years? I say, unaware. I was unaware.
This is Pua Case again. She's one of the leaders of the opposition to the TMT, the 30-meter telescope.
I never even really knew that telescopes were being built. I was not even in that understanding they'd appear, you know?
The first significant public opposition to development on Mauna Kea came from the Sierra Club in the mid-70s. It was a time that's now referred to as the Hawaiian Renaissance, a moment of cultural consciousness and rebirth for Native Hawaiian people.
So many things happen and we aren't even aware of it. Back in the 70s, it was at that time we were very angry. I was angry. It was happening too fast. One day you had a beach that you camped on that your family fished from, and the next day it was sold. Hotels were being built on sacred grounds, our best lands. And we were just finding out who we were at that time, and in this next breath, it seemed to be gone.
By the early 90s, Hawaiians were fighting back against the telescopes. In the media, in lawsuits, and for the last 4 months in a contested case hearing. A kind of cross between a public hearing and a court case.
Morning, Your Honor. Tin Lui Kwan and Ian Sanderson on behalf of the applicant, University of Hawaii at Hilo.
Good morning.
Aloha Pua case for Flores case in Rios Ohana, standing with a prayer group.
The hearings are held in the ballroom of a hotel in Hilo. They last 8 hours a day. The hearing officer is a retired judge, a stocky Asian woman with a shock of short white hair, who dresses in dark suits and often has an air of confused exasperation. There are more than a dozen parties opposing the telescope, and most of them represent themselves. Everyone in the case sits at long folding tables covered with white tablecloths, while the audience camps out in round pleather booths that ring the room. Just getting through the morning introductions of the parties can take upwards of 30 minutes, and that's before the disagreements start, about things like who does or doesn't represent the interests of the mountain.
So, all right, I did not ask UH or TIO. I just asked those who stand for the Mauna, so.
Okay, Ms. Case. Any objections from UH?
No objections, Your Honor.
And Mr. Ng?
No objections, but it does not necessarily mean that I do not stand for the Mauna.
Good morning, Your Honor. Von Cook appearing on behalf of Pu'eo. I would state for the record that Pu'eo does stand for the Mauna.
There are astronomers who support the complaints of Native Hawaiians and Hawaiians who want the telescope to be built. But we do have to generalize a bit here. To divide into groups, I'm not going to say the people who stand for or against the mountain, so let's just say the people standing on either side of the mountain. On one side are Native Hawaiians and their supporters, a group referred to as the Protectors. On the other side is the astronomy community.
Scientists are really interested in understanding nature.
That's Ed Stone, executive director of the 30-meter telescope board.
Understanding why the world, the universe, is the way it is and how it operates, what the laws are, and how we can, in fact, then apply those laws to better life for humans. So I think new knowledge is what drives most scientists, learning something new that was unknown before.
And they're not used to being considered the bad guys. Here's Jessica Dempsey, deputy director for the JCMT Observatory.
I think you don't go into astronomy thinking you're going into a controversial or politically challenging subject. There are not a lot of astronomers, I think, who were prepared for the level of pushback and the anger that came out.
The Native Hawaiians fighting against TMT, they call themselves the Protectors, the Kia'i. And the Mauna Kea Protectors, they share a deep love of the land and a commitment to standing in aloha. Here's Kealoha Pishada, a Native Hawaiian and Mauna Kea Protector who used to work at one of the telescopes.
It's one of our deepest, deepest spiritual values. There's a full spectrum of aloha, I would say. But essentially, if we were to define it, it would have to represent a combination of highest truth, of compassion and love. That's really what it means. And in that simplistic way, it ranges from, you know, how we greet our visitors that come, to how your tutu makes you a meal, and to how we take the stand on the mountain. It's a discipline, actually, and it is a philosophical and religious discipline. What the Kia'i did was they laid their life before desecration. And that actually is an act of deep love and discipline.
And the Hawaiians, they are kind of used to being painted as the bad guys.
Aloha has even been used against us. When we're making a stand, people say, oh, that's not aloha. And, you know, I've found myself saying, well, let me just tell you how much it is aloha.
The astronomers and the protectors, like a lot of distant family members, they share a similar backstory. Just listen to astronomer Doug Simons and Mauna Kea protector Kealoha Pishada.
The most broadly accepted interpretation of how the universe came into being is something called inflation after the Big Bang.
In Hawaiian culture, there is the po, the heavy darkness.
in the chant of creation, it begins in the pole, and then everything evolves through it up until you come into a point of light.
A realm of infinite darkness. And somehow from that realm emerges the first elements of what eventually gets turned into as Hawaii and Earth. Sounds an awful lot like a Big Bang from a vacuum.
In cosmology, you know, after 10 to the minus 33 seconds or something like that, matter and energy begin to separate. And when that happens, then we can actually see. There's a place in the origin of the universe where you cannot see because matter and energy are one.
And I've always been kind of struck by, you know, why they both of these theories or interpretations or belief systems start out with the same of it came from nothing. They tend to diverge a bit as you get into it, but the details of what emerge after that is almost secondary to the fact that the starting point in Hawaiian culture is now the same starting point in essentially every modern cosmology about where the universe came from. It came from a vacuum. So I think about it a lot. And for me, it's a beautiful connection.
Kealoha tried to show that connection to her college physics professor in the 80s. Let's just say not everyone is as receptive to making those connections.
He said, well, because you were talking about this mythical stuff, and I was like, well, I mean, the Big Bang's kind of mythical as well. I mean, we don't really know. We're just hypothesizing. And it's the best guess, right? But all I was trying to do was connect, you know, just connect my worldview with that worldview.
These two groups, the protectors and the astronomers, it often sounds like they're speaking different languages, even when they're both speaking English. The language of science, the language of spirit. There are a few astronomers and a few protectors who seem to be bilingual, if you will, who can hear the voices on the other side of the mountain and understand them. But for many people, there's a whole lot that seems to be lost in translation. It's not just that the astronomy community can be dismissive of Hawaiian beliefs. It's that they often don't seem to understand them. What about a mountain or a ceremony you hold on a mountain could possibly be more important than man's quest for knowledge? And for a lot of people in Hawaii, not just Native Hawaiians, what happens in those big domes on the summit of Mauna Kea is mysterious, perhaps even sinister. Why do the astronomers want this knowledge, this telescope, so badly? The battle for Mauna Kea, the first of many standoffs between construction crews and Mauna Kea protectors, took place in April of 2015, just a few dozen yards from where astronomers and dignitaries gathered in 1964 to celebrate the start of development on the mountain.
When the first day happened, when we successfully blocked the crews from coming up, there was maybe only 50 or 60 of us up here.
The protectors didn't have a plan for stopping the crews, Ruthaloa says.
Just knew we'd do anything it took to stop them from passing.
They stood in the crosswalk near the visitor center, 9,000 feet up the side of Mauna Kea.
And so when we were scanning each car passing through, eventually we got to the security vehicle with the 30-meter telescope individuals in it, and they were trying to push ahead. And one of our elders jumped in front and said no, and then that's when the whole shutdown had actually really started for us. All I remember was looking forward and seeing everybody just kind of like, not in a state of chaos, but just like all the excitement starting to lift up because we didn't know what was going to happen. And as soon as I turned around, I seen a chain of people who had nobody told them to do anything. They just started to assemble themselves shoulder to shoulder, arm to arm. It was Hawaiians and non-Hawaiians. It was elders. It was youth. It was children on shoulders, on backs. And I just remember turning around and everyone was crying.
When people came back down from the mountain that day, they were different. Something changed when the protectors linked arms, when the construction crews turned back. Something that the protectors, the astronomers, and people across the state who had never even been to Mauna Kea before are still wrestling with. This is Offshore, Stories from Hawaii. I'm Jessica Terrell. What is it about Mauna Kea that makes it so sacred to Hawaiians? So precious that women like Ruth Aloha have pledged their lives, their liberty, to its cause. Can the answers be found in traditional ceremonies, on an overnight solstice hike, or inside the telescopes themselves? That's next time on Offshore. You don't want to miss it. Speaking of missing it, this season we're doing things a little differently and posting episodes every other week. So look for the next episode of Offshore on March 23rd. Offshore is produced by Honolulu Civil Beat, a member-supported nonprofit news organization dedicated to covering the real Hawaii. Donate to support this podcast and our journalism at civilbeat.org. Offshore is distributed by PRX. Offshore's executive producer is Patty Epler. Our producer is April Estralon. Our editor is Ben Adair. I'll be back next week.